Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ole, ole. C'est la Peña Bayona, on est tous là, allez les gars, encore une fois.
So, how many areas in life are there where you would be happy coming third? Because the list is quite short, I'd say.
If it's maybe a hairy chest contest. You know, you don't want to be first the worst. You don't want to be second the best. You want to be third one with
good level of hair. Yeah. Equally, yeah. If I personally came like third in like the Olympic 100 meters, I'd be pretty happy with that.
Yes.
Just on my level of conditioning and age and everything else. If I was an Olympic athlete, maybe not so much. But like, if me currently somehow came third.
I'd like to welcome our guest Johan Blake into the studio. He's been living in Swansea these days.
All I'm saying is if Heat Magazine tomorrow published their weird crush section and they had an inexplicable rugby YouTuber on there, I'd be very happy for Rian Lowe.
Best scrum halves in the world. That's what I'd take.
Yeah.
DuPont and Gibson Park, fair enough. You can have your dues.
But I think it comes back to Argentina having been in that situation. Where we are today talking about the only time a team won the third place playoff and we're happy about it. No, the second time, because Wales did it as well in 87.
That's true.
Where a team won the third place playoff and were bloody delighted about it.
And the difference between Argentina and that Wales team, and it's quite a significant difference in my opinion. There's a few differences, but the main one is I would say that Argentina aren't shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have a chance. You could call them the third best team in this tournament and not sound like you were lying and or forgetful.
Like, Wales were like, the ninth worst team in the 1987 tournament rather than the third best.
Yeah, usually the team that wins the third place game seems to be the one that has sort of been battered in the, or has had the least sort of difficult path to the final, to the third place thing. Like, the team that's actually sweat and nearly made it to the final is usually in such a state by the third place game they can't be arsed. See Wales 2011, Wales 2019.
Yeah, it's kind of the way. I mean, Argentina last year
and in 2015.
Where, yeah, so you end up in the situation where 2007, Argentina, infamously, famously, finishes the third best team in the world. A fact that follows them around Rugby World Cups forever, that is still brought up every time they play a Rugby World Cup match and probably always will be. And you get a sense in this game already that, this is going to follow them. This is a huge day for them. You're Josh from Blood and Mud. How are you doing?
Hello.
I mean, you knew this. It was a third place game. I've got to come back for these. It's my shit, man.
Correspondent on.
Indeed.
Now that it's happened three times, you will never be able to get away with it.
That's fine.
And we got you on England 36-0 South Africa as well, or South Africa 36-0 England earlier in the tournament. And
can I just say
the piss out of Lee?
Yeah. Can I just say, by the way, also that like Argentina might technically have been the third best team in this tournament, but they're clearly better than England.
Yeah.
Like they're probably the second best team in this tournament, really, but. You know, such is the silliness of World Cups. Yeah. And frankly, I'm just glad to come back for a third place game where it's not shit. Because this is a belting game.
This
really
is good.
Enjoyed it.
This is fun. Like loads even the 87 game, Wales care at the final whistle, but it doesn't help with like all but four of the minutes before that.
Yeah, it's broadly unwatchable except for the specific moments of the tries. Whereas, this is a good game. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's even finally paid off, Josh.
The scoreboard looks like an absolute pasting, but it doesn't feel like this for a lot of the game.
Yeah.
Which I think we'll get to, obviously.
Isn't sort of until the last try that you feel like, oh God, they've run away with this.
Yeah. Oh God, well, how did this become 35, 34, 10 or whatever it is?
But it is one of those where they properly like really break down the opposition, like piece by piece.
Yeah.
And it does
mentally
take
as
until,
well.
Yeah, that's it. It does take until sort of like, you know, the 75th odd minute. And you go like, oh no, they have properly demolished them. And it's just, they really, as you say, it's the only time you can ever say this. They really deserved to medal here. They really deserved to get some silverware out of this game. Silverware, bronzeware out of this game.
Yeah.
And yeah, 100%. And it was, it's a real feel good third place game, which again, you're never ever going to be able to say that ever again. So,
no.
You know, just roll with it.
It's one of the very few weekends in the Rugby World Cup where the third place is probably more intriguing than the gold medal game. Where I think most people went in expecting South Africa to win. England done very well to get that far. Where here, Argentina had a real chance. And if not, you got to see the home nation, you know, run out and have something to be proud of at the end.
Yeah, there was a real, you can sense by the end of the first half in this game that there was a real desperation from this French team to put right to the fact that they're not playing in a final of their own World Cup.
Yeah.
And it's palpable by Rafael Ibanez's face about 39 minutes, but we'll get onto that.
So I do think
we had you on, obviously, on the South Africa England game, but what are your memories of this World Cup, the one moment against Fiji excluded?
Yeah, I mean, I watched a lot of this World Cup because I was in fourth year in Cardiff. Although the fourth year was actually the year that I actually had to do quite a lot of work because journalism postgrads be like that. But like, yeah, I watched a lot of this. And also, it was just the right time. It was such a good World Cup. Like, French World Cups are the best ones because they're the ones that kick off a little bit later than you'd expect them to. So if you're broadly nocturnal at this point, as I was, like the fact that like the big game of the day is kicking off at 9 p.m. Thank you very much. Yes, please. More of that. This was sort of like the World Cup where I liked rugby when I was growing up, and then I sort of convinced myself that I was into music and that meant that I couldn't be into sport as well because of, you know, culture at that point in time. And so I sort of come back to rugby a couple of years previously after sort of not really being into it for about 10 years and kind of, but this was the year that I kind of really like went head first into just like being a fucking rugby tragic, I think. And so like I'd obviously watched every Rugby World Cup and like 95 was my first one that I really remember, but like this was the one where I was just like, no, every single game is appointment viewing and we're not doing anything else when this game is on. And, you know, when you're a student, you can do that. You can just be like, yeah, I'm going to watch every single game in this tournament. And I think I did. I think that the two games that I didn't have much choice over whether I watched or not were this game and the final, because a friend of mine was getting married in Newcastle that weekend. And, I mean, for starters, he decided he was going to get married on the day of the Rugby World Cup final. Just, we're not friends anymore. I can't pretend that it's not part of it. But he, basically, the best man was very into rugby. And so rather than do the sensible thing and go, oh, well, you know, in the bar on the side, we'll put the TV on so that anybody that wants to watch the World Cup final where England are playing in can go and watch the World Cup final. I think it's Newcastle. It's not like there's going to be a massive fucking rugby crowd. It would just be the people who wanted to go and watch could go and watch the final. But
and
no,
Steve
the bride
Diamond.
Was like, yeah, the bride was absolutely not. No, but there's no TVs going to be on at my wedding. So then the opposite happened where nobody was allowed to say anything about the World Cup final because the best man was going to watch it when he got home.
Oh.
And so I couldn't watch the 2007 Rugby World Cup final. I had a Nokia phone that it was the first phone I ever had that had WAP on it. And that was before that meant wet ass pussy. and I was.
Though if it did, that'd be. I mean, look,
very,
I've heard stories of those
advanced
phones.
It would be very advanced for the day.
WAP in bio.
Yeah. It still had an LCD, like a liquid crystal display, not in an
Nice.
LCD sense, but like the single color. And I remember my it was me and my South African mate Andy, well, basically while the like wedding disco was going on, we were like huddled around my mobile phone with WAP on it, refreshing the BBC Live page on, and just basically following the game. And obviously, I was very much Team South Africa that night, as was obviously my South African mate. And then when I remember there was like a 10-minute period at the end where I could, like, the BBC Sport website wasn't updating, and we were just sort of sitting there refreshing. And every time I refreshed, it cost me like 4p or something. But it was just like, yeah, we'll do it. And then we couldn't display any outwards excitement, so we basically just sort of casually went outside to the sort of car park, and he sort of screamed and ran around the car park like a lunatic. And then we went back inside and had the rest of the wedding. But as a result of that, because I was at fucking Newcastle for this wedding, I had to watch this game out of the corner of my eye in the pre fucking wedding drinks meal thing when it was in this bar. And I was just like, I'd much rather be watching that game, to be honest. So it was actually really nice to sit, to actually come back and watch this game properly, because I've never watched it properly before. I've
Oh,
only
man.
ever watched it out of the corner of my eye.
Only
And I
took you
obviously,
17 years.
it only took me 17 years. It was such a meaningful game to me. But you know, it's a bronze match. When are you going to make time to watch that
It's
again?
true. It's
But it
true.
was
It's
a,
true. You have
yeah,
bigger
it was
things
lovely to
that
watch it again,
weekend.
actually. And I really loved how excited and happy Argentina were to win this game, because they fucking deserved it.
Yeah. Well, this game is like introduced when you open it on YouTube. There's a couple of versions, as we discussed off air before the game. There's one that is officially uploaded by World Rugby when they upload a load of like classic World Cup games in lockdown, which first and foremost, the fact that they've got a bronze final in there shows like how good the
What a
game
good game
actually
this
is, that
is.
they felt
Yeah.
the need to actually like put that in there. But there's the other one, which is uploaded by our Russian friend who has uploaded
Yes.
like every game of this Rugby World Cup.
Good man.
And of course, it only kicks into Russian commentary like when the game's already started. So I got to see the game introduced by soundtracked by Jamiroquai, and then five or six Australian lads who really wished they were watching this game in the pub, who were like really impatient about the fact they had to
Good
work.
lads. That was basically me at this like pre-wedding do or whatever the equivalent of. And I was just like, yeah, can we just
Well, those lads wanted to swap positions with you, you know. You just wanted to watch the game. They wanted to be out having a meal.
That's actually very true. Yeah, I would much rather have been sat in a commentary thing than a hub in fucking Jesmond. But yeah, you know, it was, and to be honest, you know, obviously every time I come on this thing about, I have to talk about the related pop culture for this thing.
Of
I mean,
course.
and this week was a real mixed bag in 2007 for
Okay.
popular culture. Because on the one hand, we this week in 2007, on the 14th, which I think is 2 days before the game, or the 16th actually, the digital channel UKTV G2 would be rebranded as Dave.
Oh, no
Which
way.
initially gave us a lot of Top Gear repeats, but would go on to probably become the most important incubator of British comedy over the following decade, plus Taskmaster, obviously. At the other end of the scale, though, 2 weeks previously, The Big Bang Theory had tragically premiered in the US, thankfully just setting the depiction of intelligent people who are into pop culture things back about 50 years on the spot. Genuinely horrible, dismal TV
The
fun.
youngest
We're off to a
Sheldon. Horrible start, lads.
But the biggest show, that wasn't even the biggest show to launch this week. Two days before this bronze final, Keeping Up with Kardashians broadcast its
Oh,
first
really? No
280
way.
episodes. So basically, this game was played in a pre-Kardashian world. Like, no, basically, nobody knew who Kim Kardashian was when this game was being
This
played.
is and they
The
all knew who Omar
last.
Hassan was. What a world.
This is the
Like,
last game where Patrice Albacete is more famous than Kim Kardashian.
yeah. Nobody knew who Kris Jenner was at this point. Like, literally nobody. No, like, imagine if the American public had opted to watch the Rugby World Cup bronze match instead of this on TiVo this week. You know,
Imagine.
I might never have had to watch Travis Barker from Blink-182 make out with Courtney Kardashian using way too much tongue about 15 years later.
And better yet, Timothy Chalamet might be dating Paul Honiss.
Maybe. Let's not rule that out. He has a way about him. You got to say,
Travis Scott and Longo. I'm pitching it now.
Oh yeah, I mean it's mad. It is mad to think like Kim Kardashian wasn't really like, aside from a badly shot porn film, she was not famous when this game was played. And it's
it's such a weird. That's not actually. You know what? No, I won't bother getting into the Kardashians as a concept.
For a very long time.
Yeah, the number one film in the US box office is a film I'd never heard of called "Why Did I Get Married," which sounds like your mate looking trying to get the score updates.
Going, why did you get married today of all days? And in the UK, I think, was it Ratatouille was enjoying its second of 4 weeks at number one in the box office before genuinely abysmal Jessica Alba Dane Cook vehicle Good Luck Chuck
somehow unseated it.
Genuinely appalling film.
It's a terrible film.
What the fuck?
That brief, 2007 was the brief Dane Cook era, who sounds like he should be playing scrum half for Worcester Warriors.
He really does, doesn't he?
Instead.
He has huge sort of functional Kiwi scrum half energy thing.
Yeah. But instead, he was a man that they looked at and Hollywood went, he'll work. He'll be a leading man. He's a vaguely handsome comedian.
Yeah.
And instead, a rat who cooks instead. Beaten to number one.
Yeah. How about chart-wise, though, in the UK? Sugar Babes About You Now, Absolute Rager.
Banger.
In the second of its 4 weeks at number one. Change was also number one album this week. Although I was listening to In Rainbows by Radiohead that week, because that was like the week after they gave it away for free. And
complete opposite end of the spectrum.
What a good week that was. Yeah.
Yeah. Although that said, In Rainbows is like the most positive as far as Radiohead's output gets. So, you know, it's the closest to Sugar Babes, you would say.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, I was busily convincing myself that it was good, and then it was shit, and then it was convincing myself it was good again. So,
are you not a fan of Written Rainbows, Josh?
I mean, I am a fan. Like now, I'm of the correct opinion that it's genius.
Okay,
but I know you can stay on this podcast. I had to work out some shit with that album, but ultimately, as long as you get there in the end,
I had to work out was how to pronounce. I think it's track six. Fostarp.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? Yeah. How are you meant to pronounce that? That's all I had to figure out. The rest of it, I was like, yeah, this is fucking well good.
So that was my little pop culture roundup.
Very nice.
Dave and the Kardashians. There's a lot of boring stuff on BBC, to be honest. So I wouldn't bore you with the Radio Times today.
I am interested in, Josh, is we've gone through your pop culture references, and we will get to the teams in the game very, very shortly, right? But you've been playing a lot of Rugby 08 to prepare yourself for this podcast because it takes so much preparation. You have to mentally train and physically train for many, many years
before you
actually get invited onto this podcast. And you decided to put yourself in the mind of rugby players, of rugby coaches, of the great rugby minds of this era. So firstly, my first question is why? And my second question is, what have you learned? What have you gotten from your Rugby 08 ventures this week?
Well, I think because as I was watching the game and sort of like throwing myself back into 2007, I sort of remembered how much of my like rugby brain of this era is sort of like EA Rugby 08 and this World Cup are sort of weirdly interchangeable. Because obviously Rugby 08 is the basis for, like, World Cup is the basis for Rugby 08. So all the kits are the World Cup kits, all the squads are broadly the World Cup squads. Like, you can play the 2007 Rugby World Cup as one of the game modes. And it's like, 12 was 12 or 13 was good. The next World Cup one, whenever that
the
one.
The 2011 like, one, yeah.
This was the last rugby game before, like, Rugby 22 that I put several hundred hours into, I think. And I was just like, everything, but like all of the players were just making me think, like, I wonder if Rugby 08 is still good. And so I've downloaded a PlayStation 2 emulator, and I downloaded the ROM, which is available for free because it's abandonware now. Nobody sells it. And man, it's still a real fucking good game. Rugby 08. It's the closest to what rugby of that period felt like. in the terms of, and I think that perhaps in a lot of ways, and I was talking to you off air about this, Robbie, but like it's because so much, I put it on Twitter, and I'm like that, like the animation when a player gets tackled, the first arriving supporting player automatically just rolls onto the floor on his side and seals the
I
ball
remember this
off.
from Rugby 04, yes.
Yeah, because that's just what happened at rugby at that point. There was, and you watch this game, and it's like, yeah, basically every ruck there's at least two players sealing the ball off, and there are almost no jackal penalties because it's like almost impossible to get near the ball. And so, like, I don't know, it just felt like this Rugby 08 is interesting because it does feel like rugby at the time. But also it's interesting because it's a really, really good rugby play game because it doesn't actually, so many rugby games since have tried to like give you the complexity of rugby in like terms of like hitting rucks and jackling over the ball and da, 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 da. And it's like, actually that stuff's just not that fun to simulate. And it's probably really hard to simulate as well. Whereas in 08, they were just like, well, we can't do any of that. So like you can control how many people hit a ruck. And everything else is broadly a lottery at the contact area. And sometimes it'll be a penalty to you. Sometimes it'll be a penalty to them. Sometimes you get the ball quick. Sometimes you won't get the ball at all. Shit happens. Deal with it. And then it just goes, and the rest of it, it's just like, yeah, would you like to, run and kick and pass? And it's like, yeah, good. Okay. We won't overcomplicate the line out. It's pretty straightforward. Scrum's pretty straightforward. Everything else, just I kind of think because of that, that's why it's good and why a lot of modern rugby games don't end up being good because it's like, oh, well, we've got to sort of simulate all these bits of the game that are incredibly important. It's like, do you actually, do you need to sort of model jackal mechanics or, and do you have to have rucks that look like not rugby because everybody's on their feet all the time? It's like, no, everybody should be flying in like fucking torpedoes like they do
Well,
in real rugby.
have you ever tried to introduce a rugby video game to someone that doesn't know about rugby?
Oh my God, yeah, doesn't go well.
No, especially a more recent one, as you say, where there are breakdown mechanics. And it is then impossible because when someone's watching, they just go, oh, they just clear it and it's fine. Someone gets tackled, then the ball comes back. When you've got to go, no, you have to put a player in there in order to bring the ball back, it is nonsense. And you can't, no one But
can get
yeah,
their head around
you're not
that.
allowed to tackle someone off the ball unless somebody's already been tackled, in which case you can then tackle the guy who wants to get the ball off the ball,
And so that, like, okay, so what you've got to do is you've got to, like, pull a player in. You've got to do this for every player you want to put in. And you want to press the thing and you want to do this and you want to weigh it up about. And it doesn't add anything, right? Versus the Rugby 08 or Rugby World Cup 2011 system being from the same developer, where you just hammer one button when you get tackled in order to secure the ball and it will put up to three players in and then you will play it away and that will be fine,
And if you
And
don't
there is
do it
a
fast
very clean
enough,
system.
they'll probably get it turned over the end.
And you can talk someone through that. When you get tackled, just hit that button repeatedly and it will secure you the ball to secure the ball. And they'll go, oh, okay, that's like what happens on TV when they secure the ball. No one actually understands the breakdown until they've watched rugby for at least 5 years. And even then, most of us don't even after decades. So why would you bother trying to put it in from the start? It'll make your game completely inaccessible.
Yeah, and like one of the things that I find so frustrating, and obviously I've put an embarrassing amount of hours into Rugby 22 over the last few years, and I still really enjoy it, even though I see it for all of its flaws. But like at the same time, like always get really frustrated with it because like the ball is never quick enough. Like, because you've got to do all these fucking ruck mechanics to get the ball back. Whereas on Rugby
I
08, it's
still
like
haven't figured it
literally
out.
somebody hits the deck, and like literally you can pass the ball right there as soon as the scrum half arrives. And like, that's what the problem that a lot of those rugby games have is they're just like, you've got to wait. And then by that point, the defense has realigned, and there's no like, and the thing that you've done, the positive thing, the big carry or the break or whatever, is over because you haven't been able to recycle the ball quick enough. And like, there should be a slider or something where it's like, if you want maximum realistic, you can do all this stuff, but you can just turn all that shit off and we'll get you the ball as quick as is humanly possible.
It's
And
like, was it Rugby Challenge 3 had that slider that was called like ruck tackle bonus, but you could never work out what it meant. So you just had to take a guess of like, am I winning more ball? I can't tell.
But it's the thing with like, yeah, rugby. One of the things I really like about Rugby 22 was they added that option to just put one player into the breakdown and yes. leave everyone else out. And like, that's a lovely idea. But yeah. as you say, the thing is then it like adds a set. I don't know. There's a whole like extra waiting and mini game thrown in that makes the game more inaccessible. And yeah. it's so tricky if you don't follow rugby to make head or tails of that game.
Yeah, where... and it's almost like they're trying to make a game for like rugby tragics like us.
Yeah.
And really, they should be making a rugby game for... I'm not saying it should be Mario and Sonic at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics.
But Houston
both should exist,
it.
Though. Like, both
yeah,
should
exactly.
exist.
Yeah.
And if, but if, and if only one of them should is able to exist, it should be the one that is like fun and accessible.
Yeah.
And not the one that is like a hardcore simulation.
Actually good, yeah.
And we know that rugby can't afford to have two games. Like,
yeah.
That is a bump. Like, so if there's one rugby game that has to exist, I would rather it be the game that like is like fun, exciting, silly nonsense, but not the most realistic thing in the world. But you can still have fun taking the Ospreys to the Champions Cup or whatever.
Oh, which I've done.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
repeatedly, yeah. But the interesting thing about Rugby 08, I think, in this era, is it captures this period of rugby really well. That
so
post,
well.
Both in a gameplay perspective, you know, in the fact that I think it's the closest any rugby game has come to what the game was like at that time.
Big time,
as you're
yeah.
saying. And I think also kind of culturally, in that it was a EA sports game and it was pushing rugby as a big thing, in the same way it was very much post-2003. And they, you know, were putting these big stars on the cover and people were talking about Johnny Wilkinson. And
yeah.
around the Rugby World Cup, there was like talk and hype and people knew it was on, which, you know, you kind of yeah. can't take for granted.
Yeah.
If you're not in France or whatever the host company happens to, country happens to be that year. And it felt like there was a genuine push for rugby to blow up in a post-95 and a post-2003 world. And I feel like they've settled into going, well, we're the world's biggest niche sport, and we're okay with that. And
yeah.
when you have conversations with people within the sport and within even World Rugby, there's a lot of people that seem like, well, everything's working for us. We're going all right, rather than looking to expand. And instead, here you had a rugby game on the EA Sports license that was what, maybe their, in the European market, maybe their third biggest after the kind of FIFA and their golf games, the Tiger Woods games. And you obviously had Madden, you know, overseas as well. But like also in the prime era, like the best era of sports games when they were coming out every year for every sport, which just is
yeah.
too expensive and too big
That's
nowadays.
The thing. There was a certain level of like, yeah, and particularly because they came out so regularly and obviously they were done by EA, and like whatever it costs to develop a rugby game at EA was like a rounding error compared to FIFA or Madden or whatever.
Yeah.
And but also because they were, it was a pre like online play ultimate team making billions and billions of fucking like dollars era, it was like, well, we have to make loads of different sports games so that we can like sell lots of different games. Whereas like, now it's just like, all we really need to do is sell FIFA or
yeah.
the AFC or whatever the hell it's called now every year, and we can make infinity money. Why would we bother to like develop a rugby game?
Yeah.
And I get it. But like this, like Rugby 08 was like, got like an 8 out of 10 in Eurogamer, I remember. Mm. And like the day, imagine the days where like a rugby game got 80% from a like game site. Whereas like nowadays you see people like, whenever a big game site goes near a rugby game, it's almost just like, oh, please don't, because you're going to
yeah.
approach this.
Like secondhand embarrassment.
Yeah, so, and you're going to approach it from the perspective of like, this should be rugby, like FIFA or Madden level, but
yeah.
for rugby.
It
and
should be like, oh
not.
Yeah, can you leave it for rugby people to review how good it is rather than people who know about video games, you know?
Yeah, and then I get it. I get
yeah,
why
yeah,
because they're judging it by the standards of sports games at the time, and also
absolutely.
They're probably approaching it as not massive rugby tragics like we are, and so they just want to have a bit of fun and score some tries, and you know, score 80-meter tries with Shane Williams or whatever, and
yeah.
it just yeah. It's not.
I
it's
really
never
vividly
that.
Remember when the only coverage Rugby Challenge got on CVG, the old games website.
Yes.
I remember them covering it and saying, you can play as Saracens or Worcester Warriors. So hooray for that, for the people who are excited there. And it really put rugby into perspective for me, was them shit talking Saracens, who at the time were the reigning champions, as though like a team you've never heard of. They clearly had a press release saying, this is a huge deal. You can play as all these teams. And they're like, okay, sure.
I remember how excited I was about Rugby Challenge because, they had the Jonah Lomu thing, which was obviously such a particularly somebody of my age. Like, even though I didn't actually have a PlayStation 1, so I sort of a lot of my Jonah Lomu rugby experiences was like very secondhand. I was an N64 guy, and we didn't get it. But like, I put so many hours into Jonah Lomu Rugby Challenge, and the Lions Tour, Rugby Challenge Tour. Oh, I loved that
Where
game.
you can pick the ball up as the number eight, big
It was on
feature,
the
big
back of
new
the
feature.
box. Yeah.
But
What a great
that
time.
shows the limitations of Jonah Lomu. Like, Jonah Lomu Rugby Challenge was like, because do you remember the original Rugby Challenge game as well?
The
Which was me.
2006 one,
Rugby Challenge 2006.
Which
Oh, mate,
yes. infamously has the word Scotland spelt wrong on the back of the box.
I didn't know that.
And there's a punch button in there. Yeah,
Yeah,
you
there
can tackle
is.
your own players. You can
There
punch the
is.
ref in it. It's great.
Yeah, I love that game. A, because like, it was, again, that was trying to be the fun one at that point, because it was like, none of these players look like they're supposed to. It's all just a bit like,
No one's
yeah, there was
scanning
no.
anyone these days, you know.
No, exactly. There was no attempt at scanning everybody. All the players looked like they were sort of, pulled in from like some like I will never forget. Steve Thompson basically looked like sort of Ram Man from He-Man. He was just like a big barrel guy with a tiny little head, and it felt nice that at that time that we had those two different games. It was like Rugby 08 was like. It felt like serious rugby, and then Rugby Challenge 2006 was kind of just like, let's just have a laugh here, lads. Let's not worry too much about this. And that's and that was
It's
the
like
vibe
how
that
on
Rugby
a
Challenge was going for when it came back, but it just didn't really work.
I really like how now on FIFA there's a no rules setting, so you can play it like a
Is
version of
there?
it where you can
That's
do
good.
offside, you can slide tackle anybody, like you can do the whole lot. Like, I would be massively in favor of that being introduced into rugby games, or in fact actually rugby generally, as I like to call it, Steve Walsh refereeing. Or Clara Munerini as well, as a more recent, up-to-date version of that. And hey, you know what? These referees are extremely consistent, so I don't mind it. It's just pure vibes. It's just
I'm
pure
fine with
vibes.
them being consistent as long as it is just purely by space consistency.
Exactly. So, should we talk about rugby? Yeah, sure. So, France and Argentina going into this. So, obviously, both having lost their semi-finals, but both have been very fun teams throughout the tournament. Obviously, first game of the tournament, Argentina beat France in an extremely shocking way that all of the French public did not take well to at all. So a load of the build-up before the game is about that. But since then, France have gone on and beaten the All Blacks and knocked them out of the World Cup that they were kind of like quite heavy favourites for, right? So I want to talk about this French team, first and foremost. And the fact that I think my perspective of this French team has massively changed throughout this tournament. And I look at that and I do go like, oh, but it is good. Like, there's a lot going on there. And you start listing off some of the names. You start going like, oh, but Elessard's had a great tournament. Oh, but Rougerie's great. Oh, but Doucetoir's come to the fore now. Yannick Young is in great form. And then you see one particular name in there that makes your jaw drop, which is at number 13, they have named David Skrela.
So
I
there
did wonder
is.
if that was some sort of glitch in the game that I was watching.
There is a note on this, though, included on the Wikipedia as well as in the French team selection, which they published when they published their team, right? That David Marty will be playing outside centre. David Skrela is just wearing 13 while playing 12 because
Can't lie, I
David,
didn't notice.
for superstitious reasons.
Right,
David
okay.
Marty,
Oh, a Will Greenwood situation.
I remember
David
Clement
Marty
Quatreneau
would
doing the
not
same thing.
play.
That he used to live in house number 13 and he got burgled, so he only wanted to wear number 12. Genuinely, I'm not even taking a
He's a
piss. But
madman.
also, Clément Poitrineau was mental, so
Yeah.
make of that what you
I
will.
mean,
But
yeah.
yeah, David Skrela playing in the centres. Who knew that
Yeah.
was a thing that had ever happened, let alone in a World Cup? Like that, you know, when
As
the
if
team
playing
is
as this
named,
playing him at
and
12 makes more sense, by the way. It's like, I know he's a big lad, but come on.
like
If you
you
check
know
the
when the
teams on
team's named,
Wikipedia,
and
they are the wrong way
suddenly.
around. 12, the team, if you count down, goes 15, 14, 12, 13, 11.
Oh, interesting. That, like, it's one of those rare occasions where literally looking at the team sheet, you start jotting names down in your dick of the day section. Like, you start going like, oh, but I just know David Skrela is going to do something stupid in this game. So he's automatically in there, you know?
I mean, it's yeah. In the start of the feed that World Rugby put out, the commentator goes like, "No, this is the match neither side would have wanted to be part of at the start of the tournament." And I was just sitting there thinking, "Mate, have you not noticed that Argentina are here?" Like, if you'd have said to Argentina at the end of the start of the tournament, "Would you like to be in the bronze match?" They'd have gone, "Fucking yeah, absolutely." Like, yeah, I mean. Also, you really get the sense within like minutes from the commentary team. Obviously, you guys have watched the entire tournament.
Yeah.
I've only watched bits and bobs. But like the pain and misery in the commentators' voices about the quality and caliber of rugby in this tournament, it really just comes through via evidence. They're just like, seriously, there's somebody's got to do something entertaining in this game because the rest of the rugby we've watched this last 4 weeks has been terrible, is broadly the vibe.
Every single game, they've been almost insufferable. The lead comms, whose name I keep forgetting almost deliberately, because
John
otherwise
Taylor.
I will go round his house. John Taylor, not that one. And Simon Mannix, yes, that one, the new Portugal coach, as the co-comms, who spends most of the World Cup moaning about how boring all rugby is, how much he
It
hates
feels that
it.
way,
And then he'll
yeah.
like go, "Well, I had a good sausage sandwich earlier, so France isn't all bad." And then we'll go back to talking about how boring the rugby is.
Who's
So
the
annoyed it was
Welsh
going to
like
coach.
touchline reporter that they throw to?
Oh, Robbie
'Cause like
Knock. Robbie
Robbie, I
Knock.
was going to say I recognize the voice.
He now
Yeah,
does
but have you
commentary on the
ever
top
watched a top
14
14
game.
Yes, that's where I know him from. Yeah.
And also he played William Webb Ellis in the World Cup
Oh,
opening
God.
ceremony of
Ceremony.
2023. Yeah,
Yes.
very, very strange one. I'm a fan of Robbie Knock though. Like, even though in this World Cup, I think about 95% of what the questions he's asked are explicitly to be answered by cliches. But like, I think he's, you know, really good at what he does. He's really hardworking and so on. But like in here, it's mainly like, okay, what do you think France need to do? And he goes like, I think they need to give the ball to some players and put it down over the line.
There's also, yeah, he's there as a touchline reporter. Why do they keep asking for his opinion all through this World Cup?
But then occasionally they will ask him something like touchline reporter related, like, "Oh, we didn't see what's going on down there," and he's like, "Just like who's down injured?" And he's like,
I don't
"Don't
know, Jeff.
know."
Lost the
My
news.
favorite Robbie Knock line from this game is when it's free all, he says, whoever scores the next try, which would be the first try, will have a foot on the path of victory.
I thought that I remembered that conclusion because I was like, "Hang on, he's not going to say the next try is going to be decisive, is he?" It's like it's three all and there's 20 minutes gone, and you can see that he sort of almost sort of like accidentally reverses into that cul-de-sac and then has nowhere else to go and is just like, "Well, I'm going to have to just use some real good wordplay at this point
Because I think
to
he
try
starts
and navigate
saying,
out of this."
like, they'll have a foot in the door. And then he's like, no, that doesn't make sense. That's not what this
Yeah.
phrase means. And so he goes, like, okay, I've made two speaking errors very back to back. I'm going to style this one out. And to be fair, he does. They have a foot on the path to victory.
Doesn't make any sense, but it got him out of that cul-de-sac.
And
That's
to be
all that
fair,
matters.
Argentina did score first. So
To be
he
fair,
was
yeah,
right.
he was right. He was bang on. He should have said, whoever scores first is going to win, because that's what
Yeah, it's true. In hindsight, 17 years later, it's
Though.
definitely what you should have done.
It's funny because you say that about hindsight, right? France manager Joe Marzo, their team manager, was asked about the results post game. And he said, if we'd scored earlier, perhaps scored first, we would have done things differently, perhaps won.
It's the foot on the path to victory, man.
Yeah,
It
you've got
changes
to get your foot on the
everything.
path to victory. That's the most important thing.
Speaking of the French management, can I just say, just seeing Bernard Laporte in a coach's box is like a fucking jump scare.
Oh, I
Whenever they
know.
cut to him, he's like,
Mental,
"Oh,
isn't it?
Jesus, that guy again." I thought we'd
Like,
seen the back of
remember
it.
when that guy was like a rugby expert rather than just some
A
rich
criminal.
dickhead? Yeah.
But this is interesting because they bring up as well the Monday after this game. This game is played on a Friday night. The Monday after, he is leaving to go and join the cabinet as Secretary of Sport.
Only in France, man.
I know.
Only in France. And in many ways, that talk about a sliding doors moment. If France had won this World Cup, who
Yeah.
knows? Maybe Bernard would not have taken the path into politics, and maybe he would have ended up keeping his hands clean instead of just,
Yeah.
getting incredibly fucking thick as thieves with Moed Altrad and getting up to some stuff.
Or he might have
It's
ridden the thing higher up into politics
This is the
instead
thing.
of.
He might be president of France by now.
You imagine that?
Like, he was a
And
cabinet minister for
to be
2 years?
succeeded by Marc
This
Liebermann as
is
president.
the mad thing. He was Secretary of Sport in France for 2 years, and then and just went back to Toulon, won all of those Heineken Cups with Toulon, and then ended and
Straight to
then
prison.
straight well straight back into politics as head of the French Rugby Federation. And then, as you say, vice president of World Rugby, vice president of the Six Nations, and then corruption, and
Yeah. To just kind of
prison.
cartoonize this story for anyone who doesn't know it, essentially what happened, and this isn't literally what happened, but essentially, when Toulon won three European Cups in a row, they essentially signed a World 15 because metaphorically, Bernard Laporte was like robbing banks in order to sign Matt Gitto. Let's put it that way. I mean, yeah.
He was also like his one big achievement in his time as Secretary of Sport of France was he was not achievement, but there was a huge dispute during the Tour de France between the organization that runs it, the organizer of the Tour de France, the French Cycling Federation, and the Union of Cyclists of International, which is a name in French that I tried to translate on the spot. And he basically just like waded into the middle of this and apparently made the whole situation worse, essentially. And he was just like, we're just going to do what I
Scouts.
want you to do, not what any of the four parties involved want to do. And just blew this up into like a national scandal when it was previously a small dispute between some cyclists.
One of my favorite things about watching this World Cup back is every time France play, there is just so much commentary about Bernard Laporte that's just aged badly when they're potentially trying to weigh up that he might be a goodie and not a baddie, you know?
Do you want another great
Before
fact
ages
about
could come out. Go on.
Bernard Laporte? So, there is a French comedy show called Les Guignols, which I believe that is how it would be pronounced, which is basically the French, for British listeners, the French spitting image, which is a puppet show. It was daily for a very long time. It ran until 2018, and one of their most popular characters was Bernard Laporte, who would he started when in about 2005 when he first kind of rose to prominence in coaching and rugby. And the running joke with him was it initially started they do like sporting segments, and then obviously he becomes Minister for Sport and his profile grows and he's head coach of the French national team and it grows and grows and he continues because it became a very popular running joke that what he would do is he would come in. He would lead to some great violence. You know, everyone would break into a fight the moment he arrived, and he would describe it as the values de Overly, which is the values of
I
rugby.
was going to say, I don't need you
Yes.
to translate that.
So
Incredible.
the joke was he would cause enormous violence and then call it rugby values. And this was on one of the most popular comedy shows in France.
So
This was
something
a
about
running
Bernard Laporte's
joke.
aged well.
I'm going to have to dig this up on YouTube now.
I know.
Absolutely. He is very puppet-like, though. They got that right.
I was going to
Bernard
say, I
Laporte.
would imagine that Bernard Laporte's fucking Les Ginoel's puppet just looks like him
Yeah,
because
yeah. Somebody must be flogging that
I've
on
just
eBay
Googled it
somewhere.
and it does just look like him. It's not even that much of a, it's genuinely not even that much of a caricature. It just looks like Bernard Laporte with maybe a slightly larger chin, but not really.
Yeah, apparently the other kind of characteristics would be many hyperboles, you know, such as
That
there would be,
scans.
Open fractures, neck cracking, crowbar fighting ambush in one sketch. In one sketch, hold on, no, there's one sketch where he would apparently fight Sylvester Stallone with a crowbar, which sounds like the greatest thing that's ever been made.
What are we still doing here?
Why do we talk? Why are we talking about? Will, can we have permission to not talk about the rugby and talk about the port fighting sliced alone with a crowbar?
That guy signed Tom May.
But like, it's just weird seeing him in a coaching scenario, given everything that's happened since. Although, frankly, he's back in a coaching scenario now, so. Everything that's old is new again.
Please tell me you've got some dirt on Gus P's show that's going to come up, like that he was also in a puppet show of some sort or something like that.
I don't think so.
Although I suppose you can't see a puppet's feet very well, can you? So you can't see the trainers and blazer combination.
If anything, Gus P's show would have really enjoyed the fact that Rugby 08 was a good game that came out of this World Cup, because
it's true.
Noted rugby game evangelist Gus P's show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Robbie, did you want to carry on with Bernard Laporte, or do you want to talk about Argentina?
Oh, well, yeah, we might as well talk about Argentina.
Let's whisk through this Argentine team, because obviously we've done a lot of talking. So the main talking point
is a podcast.
Yep. So Omar Hassan, our favourite baritone, is back in the starting team. Genuinely an operatic baritone, by the way, Josh. Tight head prop, Omar Hassan. He's directed a rugby opera, like the whole thing. Like that guy has lived a whole life, man. Well worth looking up if you're not aware. Longo in at number 8. Personal favourite of Robbie and myself. After watching him for like 4 games, I'm utterly obsessed with him. Because he plays like a number 8 called Longo, and that's kind of...
And I suppose because the two big changes really are the front row. They bring in Hassan, and Mario Ledesma drops out after being knackered and clearly concussed in one game, and
he's out on the piss.
And they're like, you know what, you know what, Mario, you've earned this, you've earned a lie down. So in comes Alberto Verne Basaldo, who is so kind of an amazing story to go alongside. Obviously, Omar Hassan being a baritone is the standout story in that front row.
Yes.
But Alberto Basaldo, in 2005, late 2005, in Autumn International, on one of his first few caps, having his debut the autumn before, he suffered like a horrendous injury in a tackle where basically he had like the fifth vertebrae and an invertebrate disc slipped in his neck. Apparently it was like half an inch off paralyzing him for life. So he was bedbound for a year, eventually got him to start training, and managed to come back in time to play in this World Cup.
That's mental.
And so, yeah, got back in time and got a game here right at the end, having been, you know, behind Guinizu and Ledesma for the rest of the tournament.
He was very good. I really rated him.
Yeah.
He was like Ledesma light, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Played him very much the same way.
Then, do you know the best bit as well, right?
Go on.
Off the back of this game and this tournament, Toulouse signed him.
Yes!
And so he went on to win the Heineken Cup, played in the Heineken Cup final in 2010.
Oh, son. What a guy.
So, yeah. Having been playing in the Pro Day... Oh, no, been playing locally in Argentina before that. So, yeah, like, lovely story. What a career. What a guy.
However... one less lovely story regarding the Argentine team and the change they make. And I think that this is the only time we'll ever get the chance to talk about this guy on the podcast. And I feel like we should mention it, because it is a genuinely insane thing that, you know, we've covered a lot of players in this podcast before, but I don't know if something like this has ever happened before with a player that we've covered. And obviously this is much less lighthearted than we've talked about. But on the right wing, Argentina bring in Federico Aramburu, who is a brilliant player. Used to play for Glasgow Warriors. It was excellent. One of those players always like scored tries against the Welsh teams. It was just the way it was. Absolutely fantastic player, like lightning fast, brilliant counter attacker.
Also had spells with Biarritz and Perpignan. When they're both very good, serious teams.
Yes, and he kind of, I guess, re-entered the news a couple of years ago,
2022,
because he, and I genuinely feel insane saying this about a rugby player, he was murdered.
Yeah.
At the age of 40?
42.
So,
oh, yeah. I do remember this now.
Got into a argument with a far right, who's described as a terrorist by the French authorities, a far right extremist, far right activist who had apparently was known for having committed acts of violence around Paris, was known as quite a Luc de Priol, I believe. I apologize for the pronunciation. But yeah, he'd got into an argument that morning. He tried to stand up for someone who was apparently being racially abused in this bar, this cafe in Paris. And later that day was the victim of a drive-by shooting. A few weeks later, the suspect was arrested in Hungary where they'd fled. And the trial is kind of ongoing now. So, yeah. But a
Jesus.
Horrible story. But
yeah, shot dead in the street. Which yeah. is fucking awful.
But all of the stories that came out about him afterwards were about what a genuine and kind man he was. And
the last thing he did was stand up for the oppressed, you know?
Yeah.
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 Fucking hell.
And it was, there were some of his, you know, French teammates who talked about that was just who he was, you know, like if he was going to go anyway, it was probably always going to be doing what he believed in.
Yeah.
And was, and yeah,
I can I can remember when that came out and it being like, holy fuck, I remember watching this guy play like less than 10 years ago.
Yeah.
At a really high level, scoring unbelievable tries as he did. And just the outpouring from former teammates, his former clubs, and absolutely everybody going like, this guy gave everything when he played for us, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just awful that, yeah, shot dead age 42. Because he yeah. stuck up for somebody.
Fucked, man. Honestly.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, which obviously isn't very much, because rugby doesn't really mean much when something like that is kind of like something that you talk about yeah. on your podcast. But I think that, you know, sometimes these stories are, you know, interesting and worth telling, you know, even though they're not cheering. But for what it's worth, like, he was really bloody good in this game. And like,
it was good.
So cool watching him play again. Because like, you know, if we just look at the rugby player, Federico Aramburu, rather than the person Federico Aramburu, like I remember thinking this guy was like a proper like Barbars type player, you know, who would like skin people for fun, had an amazing set of feet in him, defensively really solid. And just from a genuine note, like it was really cool getting the chance to watch him play again, especially in this Argentine backline. And like, yeah, dude was on fire. As the rugby player, yeah, it was just awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Like, when you talk about what happened, those are the moments he'll be remembered for as a man, as a person.
Yeah.
But the try he scores in this game and his performance in this game is what he'll be remembered for as a rugby player. You know, what he'll be remembered when he's tired.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Like, it's a proper viral moment. It's so good. But we'll get into it. And I think, you know, do we want to get into the game?
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Obviously, there's a lot of kind of faffing around quite early on because both teams have, like, not nerves, but a kind of like, oh, do we have to do this type vibe about them in sort of the first sort of like 10, 15 minutes. And yeah, it's also kind of not helped by the fact that Paul Honest, the referee, is actually refereeing the game. Like, come on, man. Yeah, I mean,
he's refereeing. There's too many referees, too many flat passes as forward passes.
Exactly that. Exactly that.
Come on, dude. Remember where you are.
Paul Honest in this game breaks Derek Bevan's record as the most cap referee of all time.
Mm.
A record that will stand for another year before Jonathan Kaplan breaks it. Speaking of right wing nutters. But Paul, yeah, I mean, we'll get into Paul Hollis as we go on. But like, yeah, very surprising because he is not a referee that gets talked about ever these days.
Never,
you know,
World
Rugby aren't going to him for a column, are they, every week?
Absolutely not.
One of the,
although one of the touch judges is.
Yeah. That's a jump scare when it comes up.
I was going to say, Nye's rocking up and ruining things.
He really wanted the whistle, man.
Big
he was
time.
Trying so hard to take
so
that
much.
Thing. But one of the first notes that I have is like, there's a bit where Yannick Nyanga catches the ball in the backfield and genuinely runs like a winger. Like I looked at him and was like, wait, who's this winger from France? Like I don't recognise him at all. The way he steps and glides and offloads, it's just magic.
Genuinely, and I was watching this game like... and just thinking, what? How? Like, he is like, he so rarely gets mentioned in this sort of like great pantheon of like French back rows from this era, like, you know, Cheval and Haranordicky and Dusetar and Betson and, you know, all people who are in the fucking squad today. But like, what he watching him in this game is like, oh, that's what a six is going to be like in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
both in terms of his athlete, you know, he's an unbelievable athlete. He's so quick. He's so, but also just
good
like
the breakdown.
The clear out he does at about 19 minutes in, where he just genuinely destroys someone and sends him into space. And it's like, and the charge down, he nearly scores a try. It's like, it is all action, everything. And you're just like, how did you not get 100 caps for your country?
Yeah.
Like, I know there were other players in he, you know, 46 caps, man.
He was
over 11 years. That is not enough for a player as good as he was.
The one accolade he does have that goes to no other player in this game, he was on the cover of Rugby 08.
Damn right he was, with Richie McCaw. Weirdly.
Yeah.
What?
Unless you're in the UK, in which case it was Mark Cueto.
But mate, like,
what was that?
90 speed, 90 strength, 90 agility, 90 offloading. Like, he was clean through, throws this gorgeous offload. Rougerie and Skrella kind of link up. And Jean-Baptiste Elissard runs this perfect support line on the inside. And Skrella offloads it to him. And you're looking at it going like, mate, how have I not seen this before? This is the try of the tournament. And then Paul Honest, the absolute grass, calls it back for a forward pass. Like, I don't care if that was very clearly forward. I don't care. And like,
morally, that's not a forward pass.
Exactly. And like, there's another forward pass that he calls back for, I think Rougerie's about to score, like 10 minutes later. And it's like, gents, can I please just remind you that this is the third place match that we're refereeing here?
None of
this isn't
matters.
The actual final. Like, can we just let some of these slide, please?
Can I offer you a theory on this
Go
game?
On.
I think Rafael Ibanez has the quickest ever turn from starting the game to going full FIDM.
Yeah.
I was going to say, he doesn't have the quickest ever many things. So I was really curious where you were going with that.
Temper, yes.
He has a moment 2 minutes in where he's putting a grubber kick in himself.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, in the modern game, would have been a 50-22.
Yeah.
But in 2007, he's just ignoring a three-man overlap. Yeah.
He kicks twice.
Barking for the ball off Skrella so that he can put the kick in instead. 2 minutes in.
Oh, it's glorious. It's glorious. Yeah, he kicks twice in the first half alone. And he gets hooked off quite early in the second half because, like, he's done a whole career of this shit.
His head is gone by the time he's pulled off as well. We'll come to it, but he has absolutely, like... I want to think, this is the most bad-tempered bronze final you've ever seen.
Oh, mate, when Ronchero shoves Dusetoir in the face 5 minutes in, like, well, you know it's going somewhere.
Literally, Haranordicky and Albacete can't last 2 minutes without having a fight. And Albacete, literally, they come up from the first scrum and Albacete's got his fist cocked like he's a silent movie boxer or something. He's like, oh, yeah, you gotta... and that's 2 minutes in. They haven't had a chance to do anything. Also, like, I can't remember from the rest... Was this the last World Cup where scrums felt like as dynamic as this? where it's just like everything happens really quickly. Nobody cares about stability. Everyone's pushing.
Yeah.
There's no real like control of anything. It does make the game go quicker. It feels very dangerous. But yes. It definitely makes it all go quicker.
Like you press the skip 5 seconds forward button. Yeah. And you're like, oh, I've missed a scrum.
Yeah.
And it's... like everything, everyone's wheeling everything all the time. And sometimes ref call it. But
that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
But they were playing by rugby away rules, you know? You just hammer the X button and then you're broadly fine. You just get the ball back. Sometimes Gus Picho pops up at the back and makes you knock it on.
I tell you what, though. Like, I'm not saying that, like, skill levels in rugby have got better or worse, but France have 4 handling errors in the first 10 minutes. It's like, I get it, guys. I know what you're here to do.
Having watched this whole World Cup back, you're like, oh, that's actually quite low. That's actually not that bad. Yeah. Compared to 87 before this. Woo.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this is why scrums had to be faster in these days, because there were so many of them.
We do get... So Christophe Dominici does one of my favourite things that a winger or fullback can do, which is to be absolutely on fire for the first 15 minutes, then forget until the end of the game.
Yeah. And they go, ooh.
He's like completely electric, and every time he gets the ball, he's beating people and he's making breaks and he's putting people in space, or he's, you know, going straight for himself, and he's brilliant. And then, like, you get to about 15 minutes, you get to about pretty much the first Argentina try, about 20 odd minutes, and suddenly he's like, you know, goes off to, you know, check the newspapers. He has a little watch of Bernard Laporte on Leguignola's. You know, he's just like getting up to other stuff. Then he gets past the last 10 minutes and he gets the ball again. He's like, oh, yeah, I was playing brilliantly, wasn't I? I'm just going to do this again. Like, Nunez Filho did the same thing against Portugal in the World Cup, just gone in 2023. Well, like, he was brilliant for 10 minutes and then brilliant for the last 5 minutes. And in between, he broadly wasn't playing.
I tell you what, though, in terms of, like, the French team, A, Elissard and Michalak are probably the most unserious 9-10 combination in the history of World Cup. It's just like, what do you expect to achieve from this, if not chaos and silliness? Which, to be fair, is what we get. It is, but also it's like, in terms of contrasting wingers, fucking Dominici and fucking A. It's weird seeing Rougerie be quick.
Because
he's hung around for so long, and you know, like, obviously he gradually moved closer to fucking outside half as this career went on, and he got slower and slower and slower. It's weird seeing him basically be a sort of proto Alex Cuthbert, where he's like this giant rangy winger who's a nightmare because he's 6'4" and really fucking quick. It's like, oh yeah, I kind of understand why you were so good now. I'd forgotten that there was a time when you weren't one of the slowest wingers I've ever seen. And, like, yeah, he's just, he's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, whenever they put a kick into across the crossfield kick, it's just like, oh, God. Because all the other, like, most wingers at this point are like 6 foot.
Mm.
And he's just like, all right, I'm just going to put my hands up in the air, just cause a massive problem whenever I do it.
He did drop a few, sadly.
Oh, but, yeah. I'm not saying he caught
like any. Whenever it was like in the opposition 22, he'd start dropping them. But like whenever it was like in a pretty non-dangerous place, he would just be like, yeah, that's fine. I'll run it back. You know, I'll make a good 40 meters now. Thank you very much.
I think it says a lot about this French team. Like, I'm genuinely though, how do they not score in the first 25 minutes?
Yeah.
It's one of the great mysteries of our time. Like they have the forward passes, but then they also have like 2 or 3 periods where they're like hammering on the Argentina line. And you're like, well, this has got to be a try, surely.
France win 4-1 on spectator tries, on disallowed tries.
Yes,
and they are all fucking blinding.
Yeah.
That one where they do a counter-attack, where they catch the ball on the left-hand side, spread it across to the right-hand side, and then without taking a tackle, they just go, now we'll just go back where we came from. And like Argentina are all sufficiently like blowing that they can't be asked to go back there. And they throw the inside ball, which is given as a forward pass. And I think it's David Marti goes over and like scores what he thinks is like the best try, like gives it the whole big and celebrating. And then goes like, oh, come on, like third place. Come on, third place playoff, please.
And in fairness, you know, we do get one of the all-time great World Cup tries in this game that is actually given. But like, it's in terms of, I can't think of many other games that have had about two or three absolute worldly tries, just not given for shameless fucking tier like grass. Not even TMO grass. Now, these days it would be a TMO grass in your. What, it's just a bad refereeing decision to not just let that go.
It's not very Nige. Steve rules, is it?
It's not. It's really
so,
not.
France spend 10 minutes and 50 seconds in the Argentine 22. And they get one try late on.
Wow.
Yeah, by which point the game is fucking done.
Yeah.
And no amount of the commentators going, you know, is it, have they left that too late? It's like, yes, they've left it too late. It's 69 minutes and they're like 34-3 down. Of course they've left it too late.
Can we talk about the first try, though? Contepomi's opening try of the game. It's obviously one of the worst tries Argentina score in this game, but it's a superb try. Like, the way that they structure it absolutely brilliant. Like, Pichot plays an absolute blinder in terms of decision-making of, like, when to go wide, when to, like, just give it short to the forwards, until eventually he kind of scoots the short side. Contepomi runs this lovely little short line where the temptation is to sort of drift towards the touchline, but instead he just really squares up, runs a fantastic line and dives over in the corner. It's really nicely taken.
Beautifully worked.
Also, by the way, mad that Contepomi at 30 years of age only has 59 caps at this point, given that he's basically been a mainstay of a Pumas team for a decade at this point. And it's like, it just shows how little rugby Argentina got to play before they entered the Rugby Championship. But it's like, you're going to have one of the all-time great players, full stop. Certainly one of Argentina's all-time great players. Who's been playing
much less fidim in this era, I find.
Yeah.
Still quite a bit of fidim.
He's quite fidim. But, like, you know, he'd been playing international rugby for like 12 years at this point.
Yeah.
He had 59 caps. Like, that's not a lot. For, like, nowadays, he'd have well over 100. But obviously, Argentina were just playing when they could at this point. It's remarkable that they're as good as they are, given how little. It's similar to like Japan, really, I guess, in 2015 and 2019, that they're sort of managing to be good in spite of a consistently irregular access to top flight competition.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back to the
win his first cap in 1998, and then only got to play odd bit games, you say, like there was no regular competition for them. There's no regular schedules. Mm-hmm. They were only getting the games they were invited to.
Yeah. The odd autumn game over there, the odd summer tour they're in there.
Yeah. And they were much less regular in that than Japan are now, where Japan at least are able to attract lots of teams to come over and play them. Argentina weren't getting that. They got the odd tour from, you know, Scotland, France, Ireland right before this, but they were few and far between. And then, you know, odd games in the autumn. There's no regular fixtures.
There's not the financial pulling power of, like, come and play us. We give you much money.
Yeah.
It's, you know, go to Argentina, get abused by fans who think it's a football match. You know, it's fun.
Yeah. We'll also, since this will be the last time we talk about him, we're going to be nominated for World Player of the Year this year. Contepomi, one of five on the shortlist, which is eventually won by Omar Hassan, Brian Habana. really well taken try, really lovely. The way Argentina worked their way up the field and the sheer contrast of that to how France have been attacking in the lead up.
It is the most against the run of play.
Yeah.
Sort of thing of just like France have spent most of the first 20 minutes with the ball in Argentina's half. And okay, they've had some poor luck, but they've also absolutely butchered a few massive opportunities in Argentina. I think it feels like the second or third time the second time they've actually got the ball, full stop. Yeah. And they just go, oh, I was just going to go up and score if that's all right with you. And then they do it again seconds later.
There two more soul-crushing tries than these two, if you're friends?
Have you ever seen anyone spaff a drop goal off the post as hard?
I know.
It genuinely
nearly knocks the post. So
yeah.
It's genuinely like, it's like a cartoon. Yeah. But then he spaffs it and it's so hard and then it just bounces perfectly in a classic, like, I mean, good luck charging that one down any France player, you'd have ended up with a hole in your chest, like Tony Stark or something.
Can you imagine if they did an Alan Davis face charge down? They'd have died.
Oh my god, yeah, you'd have killed a guy. Like, say like, what you like about Hernandez.
Their head would go through the posters at the ball.
Yeah. Space Jam.
Literally,
yes.
It goes so hard that I'm pretty sure it lands behind where Hernandez originally kicked it.
Yeah, yeah.
And France have obviously gone for the charge down, turned around and gone, oh, has it gone over? Oh, what? No, it's still in play. What? They're about to score.
So and then it's just, yeah, and then it's just like, okay, I'm just going to, it's just some real fucking good forward carrying. There's no, yeah. Even in that position, they still don't feel like they should score that easily. But it's just two big fucking heavy carries. And then it's just, and instantly.
Our boy Hassan.
Yeah. And instantly, yeah. And then it's fucking 17-3 or whatever it is. It's out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And France completely lose the plot at this point. Like, the commentators are talking about Lionel Buxis coming on as a sensible and safe pair of hands, which shows where they are mentally at this point. And yeah, then a couple of minutes later, Elisard tries to do what I can only describe as an E. Honda style headbutt on Contepomi, which, like, obviously, Contepomi's quite rightly taken issue with the fact that Elisard has basically Eric Cantona karate kicked somebody at the base of a ruck, which Nige spots, by the way, but then goes, I don't think there's anything in it, as if just like shooing somebody in the back is fine. But that's just the touch point for this game to just go extremely fucking WWE, which, I mean, if you can't have wall-to-wall tries in a bronze game, I think it should be like mandatory that it basically descends into some sort of like really bad-tempered shithouse match, which it does for a good 20-30 minutes.
You mentioned earlier the ongoing fight between Arnaldi and Albacete, where they're just very gradually taking bits out of each other. That my favourite bit, and it's maybe the bitterest thing I've ever seen a rugby player do, right? So Albacete is clearly the lineup captain for Argentina, and Arnaldi is clearly the lineup captain for France. And there is a moment where Argentina have a line out. And typically what you do is the defensive lineup captain is you ask the opposition's lineup captain, like, oh, how many in the lineup? You know, how many should we put in? And then you go from there so you can actually, you know, you communicate it, whatever. But instead of doing that, Arnaldi, he doesn't want to talk to him. So he physically stops, stands on the Argentine side of the lineup, counts with his fingers how many players are in the Argentine side of the lineup, and tells the rest of his forwards to fuck off. Like, he can't even converse with him about something that is, like, normal practice on a rugby pitch.
This is the thing. There is no, like, sort of gamesmanship thing where they shake hands and have a pint at the end of this. They really, like, obviously, there was the opening match and there was a lot of fucking, like, France obviously wanted to right some perceived wrongs, and then it just doesn't happen. And they do not deal with it in what you would class a dignified manner. I was like, I mean, and it, obviously it all kind of comes to a head at the end of the half when we get a double yellow card for, which, I mean, it's great. It's really funny that it's all so petty and shitty. And then, like, Ibanez gets sent off for, like, kicking and, again, shooing somebody at the bottom of a ruck, which Nige spots this time.
Love this.
End of this half is the highlight of this tournament so far. Because so France get into the 22, and they're obviously 17-3 down. They are gutted. They are angry. They want to score badly. They are going for tap moves. And they're like before Exeter repopularized them.
Oh, yeah.
They're, like, going for these. They've got one set of
tap moves. They go for the same one for a time.
No, they've got two. They've got two.
Oh, they've got two.
They've got two. One is Ibanez passes it, and one is Ibanez charges.
That's fair. That's fair.
The one where he passes it,
they definitely called the one where he passes it when he charged.
Oh, yeah. But the one where he passes it, they kind of flick it up and they form a maul off that, which is cool. I quite like, someone could try that nowadays as a tap move, and, you know, there's something interesting there.
They form a maul, and then instantly every Argentine forward just flies in at the side and smashes it. It's just no part of that is officiated properly.
But, like, at this point, you said there's been about 30 fights over and over again. Nigel Owens just started to stick his nose in. And There's a moment where Paul Honest calls both touch judges over, and he's like, well, what's going on? I don't know. And Simon Mannix quite accurately makes the observation that he has lost control of this game completely.
Yeah.
Like, his big supply teacher not knowing how to tell off the kids' energy. Like, paper airplanes are being chucked around the whole class. And he calls over both touch judges, and he's like, guys, what do I do? What do I do? And Stuart Dickinson, in a rare moment of not being in the TMO track, is like, you know what you should do? Next time, just give a yellow card. And he's like, that's a great idea. I'm going to give a yellow card next time.
And like, because Argentina have conceded a lot of penalties in the red zone at this point.
Yeah.
And so, but then the next penalty that they concede is not for anything cynical.
Yeah.
It is just... Yeah. And also, it's not it's barely in the 22 at this point because they've done some good defending and France are back outside the 22. And they, it's just fucking basic off the ball shit.
Yeah.
But then there was like, well, you said for me to send off the next guy, so that's what I'm going to do now. The next penalty, he goes.
At which point, Nigel Owen steps in and he's about to give the yellow. Like, he's like reaching into his pocket and Nigel Owen steps in and is like, so the French captain, number two, yeah, he's just kicked someone in the head. And then he's like, oh, okay, cool. I'm just going to give the yellow card to the Argentine lock over here. He's like, no, you should give a yellow card to him as well. He's like, oh, okay, that's a great idea. So Honest runs over and he bins, like, as even as he's watching him, he bins Alvarez. And
Alvarez,
you know,
who's
like,
on the floor getting treatment,
yeah,
because he's been shooed.
Yeah. Still being looked at, yeah, by a medic.
Yeah, it's like, I've never seen somebody receive a yellow card while a medic is applying some sort of bandage to his head.
At which point,
it was really funny.
He goes over to Ibanez and is like, and you're getting a yellow card for kicking him in the face as well. And Ibanez is then like, what? And
he then fucking kicks off.
He
oh my
turns
God.
To Nigel Owens and starts like screaming at him, like raises his fist at
he
Nigel
throws
on
a water bottle
side.
At me.
And yeah, as he eventually gives in, throws it, launches his water bottle at Nigel on the touch.
Overarm launches it.
Yeah, like, it's incredible that like, he doesn't get a second yellow card for this.
Yeah.
Also, just like how insanely petty it is that, like, yeah, Alvarez does something mildly cynical, like a very, very, like a semi-professional foul.
Yeah.
And
Ibanez
is just like, right, how fucking dare this cunt? And absolutely kicks his head off. Like, literally goes, I'm going to remove this man's head because he gave away a penalty.
He has, like, because this is. Is this Ibanez? It's not Ibanez's last game in the end, is it? Because he retires and unretires. But, like, he thinks that it's his last game.
Oh, it is. This is
France.
His last game for France.
Last game for France. Ah, okay, it is. And he's,
it's how it should end.
It's not going how he wants it to. And so he absolutely loses the run of himself completely. And I was thinking, like, obviously, Honest is like, the most capped referee ever at this point now. And did you feel like they kind of gave him this game as like a sort of, you know, oh, a soft one, you know? You can have
well,
the
no
record.
No one cares, do they?
Yeah, exactly. No one cares about this game. You can have a record and then, you know, you can have your last, you know, your match-winning game can be your record-setting game can be a nice, easy game where nothing's going to matter. Nobody's caring about it. You're not going to have a lot to do. Just run around and blow the whistle. And that, but what he hasn't, and that's what he's expected, basically a friendly, but what he's walked into is the most bitter street fight I've ever seen in a Rugby World Cup. And he's just like, oh, I didn't sign up for this. I thought this was basically my fucking gold watch game and I was done.
Yeah, when earlier I said Honest actually referees, he referees the rugby. He really over referees the rugby and under referees the rest of it.
The street fighting. Can I so. Rafael Ibanez, this is his last game for France, right? And he had, however, as you mentioned, Josh, unretired during this tournament. He'd been planning to retire after the World Cup, then decided, actually, I'm going to go back with that. I'm going to keep playing, right? Then, in January 2008, right before the Six Nations, he came out and re-retired right beforehand, giving the quote, I have loved every minute of playing for France, and the decision to retire is a very emotional one for me. My journey with Leibler is stopping now. I met with Marc Lievermont, who'd taken over as French coach, and he explained his vision and told me what he wants to do with the future of this French team going forward.
I thought it was bollocks and I walked away.
I respect and fully support his plans, but I've decided that I must inform him of my decision to retire.
So Marc Lievermont said, right, okay, so here's the plan, right? We're going to make Doucetois captain. we're going to cruise through England in the quarterfinals of the next World Cup. Then we're going to put an uncapped scrum half on the bench for the World Cup final. We're going to bring him on with about 10 minutes to go to see if he can win the World Cup for us inexplicably. And Jimenez just goes like, fuck that, mate. Like, I am straight
That seems
out.
Like a terrible idea.
Good luck to you, but it's nothing to do with me.
The best bit is, at the end of his speech about retiring, or the end of his press release, whatever, the last thing he says is, I like to think I still have enough good rugby inside me to play again for France and reach 100 caps. After he's just retired.
So if Lee Evremont got sacked in the next 18 months, he'd have come out retirement.
He can get those
saying.
Two caps. That's all he cares about.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's brilliant. I had no idea about that. How incredibly based of him. He saw it all coming. Plan
and went, you know what, I'll go out on the yellow card.
Yeah.
He considered coming back in 2012. And then
He doesn't come back after but yeah, that is the end of him. The end of his test career is chucking a water bottle at Nigel Owens. Which, to be fair, that's how I'd want to go out as well.
What a career he had. What a player. I absolutely love Rafael Jimenez. Oh, man.
I'm amazed Wood Rugby haven't clipped that up and tried to use that.
Violence is the best rugby value, as we established earlier. Ask Bernard about it. It's very funny. But yeah, we get to half time.
Yeah. And you think that France are going to come back out in that second half with a rocket, you know, because they've dominated so much of this game territorially, possession wise. And then. Just Argentina come out and score one of genuinely the great World Cup tries.
Well, instead, we do get a rocket right at the start of the second half because France go for a little chip over the top. Coletto, completely isolated at the back, just goes for a massive volley.
Yes!
Like volleys it into the opposition 22. Highlight of the game for me. Loved that.
I also loved Coletto's little hack along the floor when Contepomi strips Elisard. And Coletto goes for a little hack along the floor. And if it stays in, Aguja is scoring like another worldie there. But annoyingly, the touch judge doesn't miss. Not the touch judge, the touch line doesn't miss. The touch judge is having water thrown at him. He's got nothing to do with it. But
yeah. Touch judge is plotting how he's going to become the world's most famous referee while this is going on.
But yeah, Coletto's on fire in the second half.
Yeah.
Oof.
He tears through the defence a couple of times, including in the lead up to this next try.
If there's ever a try that should be in a bigger game than this, it's this one. And also one that should appear more on like highlight reels of all-time great World Cup tries, but because it happened in a bronze match, nobody thinks about it.
Yeah.
But fuck me, this is an unbelievably good try. We've got basketball offloads, we've got... You know, Contepomi's insane left-handed miss three 20-meter fizzer to make the thing. We've got a break. It's just so much ball of shit. I can't even, like, it's just wall-to-wall ball of shit.
I love Coletto's, like, he's running out of room, so he just lobs it over his head randomly, and it lands absolutely perfectly in Albacete's hands.
Yeah, but Albacete, with his hands sort of, like, up, like, pulls it out of the air like an NFL defensive back. And it's like almost any other lock in the world at that time would have knocked that on.
Yeah.
But instead he's just like, yeah, I'm just going to hold it and then I'm just going to do a lovely deft basketball offload over my head.
And as you say,
that's going to go like, at 15 metres for some reason.
Contepomi and Hernandez both have gorgeous touches in this. Oof. Both throwing like missed passes originally to each other, and then that lovely one over the top to Alvarez, who just goes,
honestly,
I need nothing to do with this. I just need to give this to Aramburu.
It's Hernandez's like absolute seed.
Good God, what a pass. What a pass.
Again, worth looking up if you don't know it. It is a try that gets shared around sometimes. But yeah,
I'd forgotten about it. And
the ball Hernandez sees over the top, like unbelievable. Just like skimming through the way he holds on it slightly to wait for last defender to bite in slightly. And then, flings it wide. Incredible. Is it Durant the end?
Alvarez.
Yeah. Alvarez
passes it to Aramburu.
Yeah.
Who finishes brilliantly. Like just goes for the corner. Just a little bit of speed is needed there. And he goes for the corner, dives over, gets up, then tries to do that thing where you run under the posts. And Honus is like, no, mate, I saw you grab that ball. And he turns around and starts complaining. Like, I didn't score that try.
It's like, mate, you just scored an all-time worldie. Look happy about it. And I know you didn't do much for it, but like, also, fair play to both of Argentina's locks for being really, like, in an era where locks were not really expected to do much of this stuff. In terms of link play, like, this try doesn't happen without both locks just doing the right thing at the right time.
Yeah.
And like, we were, for all of the gorgeous passing of the backs that they're doing, like, those two little link plays are absolutely fucking vital. And just what a try, man.
Incredible. It's so, so good. So what does that bring the score to at this point?
22-3.
Yeah, 22-3. Also, there was a moment that happens not long after this where it made me really wish that Lee was coming on here as well, because Lee is a big fan of those moments, usually done by back three players, where they emulate what you do when you're in the garden, which is pretending you're a professional rugby player, except it actually is a professional rugby player doing it.
Yeah.
Because guess who I'm about to pick on, other than Clément Poitrineau, who at one stage picked off this absolutely gorgeous, like, spiral banana kick that Hernandez does, which is about to go out, and he keeps it in, and he goes, all right, okay, I'm about to score like an 80 meter worldie here. And he goes for this lovely, like, left foot, like, pin step on Hernandez, steps inside him, and Hernandez just kind of goes, okay, I'm still here. And then he goes, okay, fair enough, you saw it coming, but you're not going to see this coming. And then steps again back off his right, and then Hernandez is like, bro, there's a touchline there. Like, you can't really step back that way. And it looks absolutely incredible by Poitrineau. He makes a grand total of 1.5 meters in his own 22.
I have written down a breakdancing contest from Poitrineau and Hernandez. It is.
Hernandez falls over and brings him to ground.
But there's no... The thing that I love about Poitrineau, and it is, he is turbo this in this game, is that, like, there isn't... He's never got the ball and not thought, I'm going to score an 80-meter world here.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No matter what situation he's in, he's just like, well, this is a step and I'm under the posts, surely. Yes. And it so rarely works out like that. But I just, I'm, every time he got the ball, I was just delighted.
The precursor, like, to on, Ramos.
Have a go.
That's it. Like, the realization that he is Toma Ramos before Toma Ramos has been like, because I remember, like, peak Poitrineau in sort of 2010-ish when he was that, but with that, like, extra tad of sensibleness.
Yeah.
Where, you know, every now and again he'd maybe pass. Where here, instead, he was just all out baller. And that realization of, like, oh no, he was right, okay, he was the same way Toma Ramos has been, and Ramos is now becoming, you know, Poitrineau in 2010 versus how he has been forever.
By the way, a word for the fact that Damien Trai got dropped for that long, that ball that he missed on Josh Lucy, where Josh Lucy scored that crucial try 1 minute in, and literally you're just like, nah, never do that again, you're not playing in the bronze final. So yeah, that'll really teach him. We're putting somebody who the same thing happened to 5 years ago. That'll really work. Hernandez goes for a really shit left foot drop goal attempt.
Yeah. Hernandez also, though, has one of my favourite moments of the tournament, low-key, where France, you know, it's one of those moments where the ball comes loose, France kick downfield, it goes deep into the 22, it's about 10 metres out from the goal line, there's three French players chasing, there's just Hernandez back there, and instead of going and diving on the ball or picking it up and trying to turn around or whatever, he overruns the ball, right, gets onto the other side so he's facing forward, picks it up calmly, and just hoofs it down to halfway.
Oh.
And it's the best execution of that moment I've ever seen in my life. And we've seen that moment happen in hundreds, thousands of rugby games, hundreds of times, over and over again. I've never seen someone deal with it so calmly, so coolly, and so well as Hernandez does there. Of just, like, going, no, I know I've got time, you know, and using every second of it flawlessly.
Now, I would say that sort of this tournament as a whole, really, it's rare that a player has played as well as Hernandez plays for this. Like, in terms of, like, a sort of 4 or 5 week spell, how he has consistently been, like, 9 out of 10 every single game.
Mm.
Like, that. And to be honest with you, the rest of his career didn't really get back then. But, like, this sort of month and a half, he is the very, very best of himself. And that is possibly some of the best fly-off play and, you know, general back play that we'd seen for a long time.
Yeah.
In that, like, he was Dan Carter good. Even when Dan Carter wasn't that good.
We'll get onto it when we do the like tournament wrap up and everything. But like,
we've given a lot of man of the match awards.
There's a reason he's had the most man of the match awards of anyone in this podcast's history over this tournament.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's going incredibly well for him. Bizarrely, in second place for player of the tournament is Scott Lawson, though. So make what you will of that.
There's obviously various. I forgot Pierre Mignoni ever played for France. So imagine my delight when he just comes on looking furious like he always does.
In the Sean Perry World Cup.
Yeah. and it's also wild that Le Guzman gets a yellow card for something that genuinely, I think a lot of refs today would give a penalty for that.
And I was absolutely like, level, Cheval.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's just like, oh, hang on. It should be a red, obviously. But you look at it and go, well, he's attempting to wrap. The contact sort of starts with the chest. But because there's no TMOs, the ref just goes, well, fuck me, I look bad. That's probably a yellow card. And there's a weird purity to that. On the flip side, though, like 10 seconds later, Pichot does a tackle on Dominici that is so much worse. That is like a red card plus in 2024. And it's not even a pen. He just smashes him straight in the head.
Clearly, Paul Honest is turning to his touchers and going like, guys. So that was quite a bad tackle. Like, I wish there was something where it's like slightly worse than a penalty, but like not as bad as a red card. Has anyone got any ideas? Guys, what's your thoughts?
There's this thing, though, that he realises he's lost control of the game and his solution is just to give yellow cards all the time.
Yeah.
And it's got big teacher sending every one of the class out vibes. Like, everyone's in detention.
We're all staying for detention. If you were. Also, Cheval's eye after that tackle, man, that is that is not normal. Get him off the field. Like, his eye genuinely looks like he's got one of those freaky deaky, like red contact lenses in it, except that's his real eye.
Yeah.
Sebastian Cheval did not need more surface area, you know?
I went to see the first Omen last night and I thought I was still watching it, seeing an enormous man with a red eye.
Yeah, it's freaky deaky. It's, it's amazing that, like, there are officials on that field that are just like, yeah, play on this guy,
yeah,
obviously.
That's fine.
Let's not get him checked out. His eye is literally the colour of a Wales rugby jersey, but let's including the pupil, but I'm sure that's fine.
Maybe if they'd thought of it as being like a Wales rugby jersey, they would have checked out because something was clearly wrong then.
Yeah.
But yeah. So we then get to another highlight of the match.
I'd never seen this before.
I don't think I had. I didn't have any memory of this.
But this is fucking unreal.
So France are on the attack for quite a long time, looking for that try that will put them back in it, you know, put them back in the game, though really, you know, it kind of feels like a done deal. And the ball comes loose into the arms of Horatio Aguja.
Good God, the feet that guy has, like, yeah, he does an outstanding step on Michalak, I want to say.
Probably. Look, yeah. If it went badly, it was probably Michalak.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, inside his own 22, when they've kind of done that thing where they slightly start to go wide, they go, oh, this isn't really on, we should just kick it now, get the winger to kick it. But instead, he steps inside, and his acceleration, man, he is off.
Like, it's so good. It's also, I know I said that there wasn't any jackaling in this game, but this whole thing comes from a very rare jackal. But then Nyanga very nearly completely sends this the other way because the pass out to him.
Oh yeah.
Like it's a weird sort of like bang bang situation where like he makes contact, but it's sort of he doesn't get the ball. And so it just opens up a huge... And Nyanga obviously knows he is the last man out there. He
almost
has got
like
to do
bumper cars him forward. Like...
Yeah. It weirdly has a sort of like slingshot effect where it just sort of... And Nyanga's just lying on the turf. But if Nyanga got his hands on that ball, he's under the posts. Yeah. Like there's nobody there. But it's an absolutely fucking unbelievable try.
The only person who can keep up with Aguja is Corletto, who does a fantastic job, runs a brilliant support line, and runs it in from about 50 metres after Aguja does the hard work from 80. It's just a gorgeous try all round.
Mm, it's brilliant, brilliant. Length of the field, superb. Coletto runs it on in style. Like, he is loving it, getting this chance to run it in.
Yeah, his hair just sort of billowing in the Parc de France, like, night air as he runs under the post. It's a glorious thing.
Do you want to know my favourite thing about this try? This is clearly the moment that Argentina get on the sauce, that they clearly start to go on the piss. Like, did either of you spot Hernandez's business decision on Aaronordeki a minute after this try?
Literally,
the kickoff lands in Aaronordeki's hands, and Hernandez is like, yeah, all right, yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
And well, just goes like, oh, Coletto, you're going to have to make this tackle. Sorry.
Also, point, you know, France are like Argentina score this try with a man in the bin. I mean, obviously, it's a upworldy length of the field counter attack tie, but like all the good work that they did in defense up to that point of keeping France out, they're just like the most ultimate of dividends at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah,
soul crushing.
It's 27-3 at this point. There's 14 minutes left. It is donezo. And yet, the commentators are still trying to tell us that something good could happen for France.
Well, France do bring on Yenel Boxis, which is where you start to realise that, oh, the game could turn. The game could so easily turn when Yenel's on the pitch. You know, he's the man.
Yeah.
And he makes an outside break and flings it to Dominici. And that was like the best moment of the World Cup for me, was Yenel making a break on the wing.
We're talking about sort of like the game of its time as well. It's amazing how much the game has changed because of how many kicks that would be 50-22s in the modern game just happen because nobody's like hanging. Like, it has, I'm not saying that it's changed it for the better or for the worse, but it has clearly changed the shape of the game that there's just nobody there covering because they don't care.
Hernandez is the king of them, man. Like,
he's so fucking good at it, man.
There's a prime Hernandez banana kick in the first half, which is gorgeous. Just the way he shapes it back against his boot.
But we should talk about France's brilliant batshit moment where suddenly they just decide to score. And it's just like, they so easily could have done that like 60 minutes earlier. And I know it's a cliche, like, oh, why do you do that earlier? But like, they literally just go wide twice and string a couple of passes together.
Ooh, and it's like, Aaronordeki makes a brilliant break out of nowhere.
Yeah. Thanks, Hernandez. You know?
Yeah. And yeah, he makes the break and they just sling it out. And Poitrineau's like, oh, I've been thinking about it for so long. What if I just did it? You know, it's like when you've been thinking about buying some novelty little treat for yourself all week and you get to Friday and you're like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to order it. I'm just going to pop into the shop and buy it.
It is a lovely show and go.
Yeah. Throws a little dummy, goes right through, goes over, runs under the post, dots it down, and Lionel Boxis becomes, right, there are 22 French players playing here. 19 of them don't score points. He does, which puts him in the top three French players in this game, I would say.
There we go. Third place. We love to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's basically, it is the sort of, it's what they've been trying to do all game, but not doing it very well. It's just mad. It feels so, like, why didn't you do this earlier? Why, if you're capable of doing this, you know, when Rougerie starts galloping through their midfield on in broken play, and it's like, oh, this guy's fucking unplayable in this situation because he's bigger than everybody and he's fast as fuck. And it's like, it shouldn't take Pierre Mignoni to come on to make this work, guys. whatever this is. And to be fair to them, they do try to conspire to not score quite a lot of tries where they have a good couple of shots at scoring a second try.
Oh, Poitrineau absolutely bombs one.
Oh, the crossfield kick where it's like, if you literally tried, man, you would have just got there.
To be fair, there's a case, and I don't think it's quite strong enough, for a penalty try against Felipe Contepomi taking him out here. Because he pulls him back, Contepomi. He pulls Poitrineau back.
I think if Poitrineau tried to catch the ball, he'd have more of a case.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
It's, well, this is the thing. It's sort of like he's trying to catch the ball on the bounce, and it's like, Clement, if you just set off at a normal pace and tried, you wouldn't have needed to get there for the ball to bounce, and then it was probably always bouncing into touch anyway. But yeah, it's not frustrating because everybody wants Argentina to win this game, but it's like, particularly when you start seeing the anger and fucking Arnautovic just galloping through.
Yeah.
These holes and hitting these beautiful angles. It's just like, come on, guys.
If your problem can be fixed by Pierre Mignone, you need to have another look at just how big your problems are.
Maybe Pierre Mignone is the answer. Maybe put the guy in charge of the entire country sport. Radical idea.
My favorite moment of the game, quite possibly, other than the two like worldy tries, but you know, it's a good fit, and Coletto's volley. Coletto. In a moment of, you know what, I'm having a great time here. Puts for a drop goal from halfway on the angle. He's never got that range in him. They're 30 points up. He knows he hasn't got that range. But he's like, I'm just going to have a crack here. I'm having a great day.
It could
of course
happen.
He comes up short.
Yeah.
Who cares?
You can literally hear the voice in his head going like, I'm playing really well, so no one's going to bollock me. So I'm fine.
Yeah,
everyone's going to come up to you afterwards and say, mate, you were brilliant, so
imagine,
I'm fine.
Yeah, imagine if it worked, though, is what he's thinking. You know, imagine if you did just spank over a 70-meter drop goal. What?
So there's probably one more moment in the game that's kind of that's worth talking about. And I think France are on the piss by this point as well.
They do sort of switch off. And very similar to the Arnautovic break a moment earlier, Le Guizamon just finds himself in a bit of space and he bursts through. And he clearly has thoughts of that, like the viral clip from earlier this year of him dropping the ball over the line for London Irish. He clearly goes, this is my moment to put it right. And he's sprinting everything he's got for the try line. He can't make it. He's dragged down around the 22. Argentina spin it out on the short side. Hernandez throws a lovely dummy. Like a gorgeous proper dummy, and I really want him to go through and score it himself.
Yeah, it would be the perfect end to the World Cup, wouldn't it?
He hasn't got a try over this World Cup, but he's done everything else, and it'd be really well deserved. But alas, wasn't to be. He's brought down. The replacement scrum half, Fernandes Miranda, picks the ball up, and he's just sort of waiting there for a moment. Like, wait, are France going to defend? Like, normally they make. Normally they make it more difficult than this. Are they going to do something? And France are like, oh God, do we have to do something? And Contepompi's like, give it to me, I want to score a try. And so he goes, oh, okay, fine, it'll be a nightmare afterwards if I don't give it to him. And Contepompi pops it down, finishes, scores his second try of the game to bring the score to Argentina 34, France 10.
I love Contepomi's like get up and like bow to the crowd after that. Because Argentina have put on a show here, man. Like they deserve to like celebrate that in the borderline cocky way that they are. And obviously it is a little bit fitting that try by Contepomi.
Oh,
but
big time.
You know what? He totally deserves his moment to just celebrate that and just go like, you know what, lads, we are the absolute fucking bollocks. Like, fair play.
What I also love is shortly before this try, Lozada comes on and Corrales, the starting lock, goes off. And rather than a handshake, he just literally gives him a kiss on the cheek in that wonderfully sort of... Literally, he's running off and then he almost forgets and he goes back and then gives him a little kiss on the cheek and then runs off. And it's just like, it's so lovely. And like, everyone's having such a nice time unless they're French. And...
Do you want a mental statistic about this try? So before today, as we record this, Friday the 26th of April, 2024, right, this was the most recent World Cup try when Owen Franks last scored a try in a game of rugby ever. Because he last scored a try in May 2010, and this would have been the second most recent World Cup game at that stage. And this was the most recent try in a Rugby World Cup when that last happened. However, today, on the 26th of April 2024, Owen Franks scored another try for the first time in 14 years. So now that is no longer the case. Instead, it is Beauden Barrett against South Africa in 2023.
Wow.
It's a very niche stat. I'll give you that.
It's
but
also in another thing that continues actually past the day, the most recent World Cup try from the last time the Scarlets won a rugby match.
Yes, that is also true.
Because they have lost this evening. So that's, that continues.
Well, but we get to the end of the game. I believe
be no head of the table for Tame Plumtree this year.
Yeah, so we get to the end of the game. Argentina, love it. All arms go in the air. Grown men weep. Gus Picho brings his tiny little daughter who doesn't look bothered on.
But you're, what, you've come third?
Is that his daughter or is that just some random like person that they get to give out? Because she's wearing like all sponsor stash. Elise or whatever her name is, because she looks fuming about it. I don't think anybody has ever looked less happy to give somebody a Man of the Match award.
Yeah.
Oh, you're probably right. But
also, he parades her around the pitch afterwards, so I don't know, man. I don't want to put two and two together here.
Because she's wearing a hat that says Homme de Match on it, so I think she might just be there to give out the Man of the Match. But she's obviously French and is absolutely fuming.
But, how weird.
It is all weird. She's giving the sort of Man of the Match speech, and she's literally just sitting there like, can you just fucking get on with this so I can go home? I'm knackered. Then she so gives him a little kiss on the cheek, so maybe it is. I don't know. I'm very confused by the
daughter
whole thing.
Is called Joaquina, so I presume it's a different. But looking at the photos, I think there's a very. I think he swaps for a very similar looking girl of the same age. The same haircut. Because, yeah,
agreed not to mention it.
Yeah. did go into the press conference with him afterwards, which is lovely.
There's a lot of really lovely stuff in the end of this game for the Argentina players. They just look so goddamn delighted with everything. It's. Yeah. I wish all bronze matches could mean as much as this one does.
I know.
Or anything at all.
Well, yeah.
So, should we do Man of the Match?
The great thing at the end of this this article on Picho's kids watching the game and him coming to the press conference is that we also talk about how Picho was cradling Felipe Contepomi's daughter as well. Because clearly he had to show off what a big bollocks guy he was instead. Yeah. So, left Catalina.
Yeah.
That must be who it is. It must be like Contepomi's kids.
No, it's his own daughter. Yeah, his own Joaquina Picho. His daughter. He's got two kids who he brought onto the pitch with him. Man of the Match, dick of the day.
Let's do Man of the Match. Yes. Josh, do you want to start? You got Man of the Match for us?
I mean, it's hard not to look at the actual Man of the Match because, like, Jesus Christ, Picho's good in this game. He absolutely runs the show from the first thing he does in this game is like the only bad thing he does, where from the like first kickoff, like Picho does like a bizarrely over the top, like full pace dive pass to Hernandez back into the in goal area, and Hernandez basically gets his head taken off by this pass and then sort of spaffs the clearance quite badly under no pressure. But other than that, he basically doesn't do anything wrong in this entire game.
Yeah.
And he just runs the whole thing.
So you're going with Picho, you reckon?
I think I'm going to, yeah. There's plenty of candidates from Argentina, but yeah, fuck it, Picho.
Fair. I'm going off one of these moments where the listeners are going to be like, all right, because like the first guy that I had written down was, we've not even mentioned him once in the whole thing, but like Longo was so good again.
really, really
rate him. Like he's such a good carrier. Like he's so intense in defense. Like he's really, really good. Hernandez, every time Argentina player, I end up writing him down. And like, I was kind of in denial about it for the first 60 minutes. I was like, no, this is going to be the game where I don't give it to Hernandez. Yeah. And then after 60 minutes, I was like, oh, but he's really fucking good, isn't he? But I'm not going to give it to Hernandez, right? Just for the sake of keeping it interesting. There's two guys, I think, up the top for me. One of them's Felipe Contepomi. Scores two tries, is absolutely brilliant, manages the game so, so well. But I'm going to give it to Ignacio Corletto. He was so good and so much fun, such great value, took his try brilliantly, was making breaks all second half and fucking around in his own half doing drop goals. When somebody is like on that level of confidence, you know they're playing well. So I'm going Corletto.
Yeah, so cool. I wanted to kind of grade this on new criteria, which is if I'd been all of these players and I came off the pitch afterwards, and if you ignore injuries, who would I have been most buzzing to be? And I reckon, right, I've never seen a player play a game, right, where like I am more convinced when they came off, they were like, that was brilliant, I was so good today, than Ignacio Corletto here. Like, he spent the entire second half being like, "I, this is great. I'm having a great time. I'm playing so well. I can do no wrong. I'm going to go for a drop goal 50 meters on the angle. I've just scored a worldie try. I've made endless counter-attacking meters." I so would have loved to have been Ignacio Coletto on this day if you ignore the injury he picked up in the last couple of minutes.
It's because... like he realizes in the midst of them, which very, very few people ever do, that these are the good, like, these are the good old days. It's like, these are the moments that I will tell my grandkids about, and I'm fully cognizant of the fact that those are those moments now, and I'm going to enjoy every second of it.
And this is the last cap for Argentina. Age 28.
Wow.
We were robbed of 2011 World Cup, him replacing Martin Rodriguez appearance. Like, I am so salty about that, having watched him in this World Cup. Yeah. Like, why were we treated to that twat instead? But we did get a Morosino in the end, so it was worth it.
He picked up an injury playing for Stade later that season, which
he was so good.
Ruled out for a couple of years.
God, I love watching him.
But what a player. What a player. Plays incredibly well. You mentioned Hernandez, I thought was brilliant as well. I thought Omar Hassan was very good.
Yes.
Aaron Ordicky and Nyanga for France are both great.
I was going to say, if there's anybody on the French side that deserves a mention, it is probably Nyanga, because fuck me, he does everything he possibly can to try and not lose this game, and then still ends up on the wrong end of a hammering.
So, oh no, Dick of the Day. We've got the Dick of the Day,
Dick of the Day. Oh God, it's such a difficult one, because on one hand, David Skrela plays, and it's kind of, ever since we've like had Rhiannon Garth-Jones on one of the first episodes of the podcast, and she was just there like, yeah, I can't not give Dick of the Day to David Skrela, no matter how much I hate Morgan Parra. Like, it's just like, it just feels like wrong to not give it to him. But I have to give it to Paul Honis for refereeing all the bits we didn't want refereed. Like, stop blowing forward passes, blow up the punches instead, you know?
I hate that I'm doing exactly the same thing. I'm adding in to all you said two extra things, right? I mean, no, three extra things. One is that complete losing control of the class. Yeah. But another, right? So in this game, France are playing their usual blue kit. Argentina are playing their usual light blue and white striped kit. Mm. And Paul Honis refers to both teams as blue.
I didn't even notice that. So, Jesus Christ.
At one point, he's like, he's telling... Picho that I'm gonna give a yellow card to blue, like blue two or whoever, and he's like, what are you sending him off? He hasn't done anything. He's like, oh no, they're
Picho.
Like,
does look actually incensed at that, as if he thinks that I hadn't really twigged that was why, but of course it is
both teams is blue because they're both playing in blue.
Incredible.
Also at one point he awards a free kick, like a mark, someone calls the mark off a drop goal attempt, and he awards it, and that shouldn't stand. That's just a small rules violation, but mostly it's for the calling both teams blue thing.
That's incredible. Oh, Josh, who's your dick of the day?
Dane Cook. No, I mean, it's hard not, like, I'm right with you there with Honis, but also it's hard not to look at Ibanez, because Ibanez is the captain, right? He's supposed to be in control of this thing, and him losing his mind is a big part of why France collectively collapse. Yeah. And then, you know, just ill-temperedly fucking swearing and chucking water bottles at referees as you walk off the pitch for the final time. It's funny. I'm really entertained by it. It's probably not a moment that he cherishes from a long and very illustrious career.
We love an endearing Dick of the Day.
Yeah, I love him for it, but
can't argue.
No.
An endearing Dick of the Day is actually how Dane Cook got most of his Hollywood films greenlit. That's what the studio executives all labelled him. I've also given Dane Cook a vote. You know, you had two votes here. No, Josh,
that's what you get when we put you through that again. You know, yeah. The best playoffs.
Thank you for joining us again. Thank you for sitting through
an
that.
An absolute pleasure.
We'll no doubt see you again in however long it takes to get to another third place game on whatever World Cup comes
I'll
next.
I'll be there. You know, I'll be there in the woods.
Josh, thanks so much, man. I love doing this every single time. Especially, like, In past, it's always been shit games that we've done. So it's quite interesting to get a different perspective. But like, oh, there's an episode with Josh talking about a good game of rugby.
Yeah, it's like, not. It's nice to come to here and actually get to talk about the good bits of rugby we've seen instead of just
yeah,
going,
man.
And then there was another knock on. And
yeah,
and there was.
Oh no! Thanks so much for coming and doing this again. Guys, obviously, love the podcast, as does everybody who listens to this. So there's no point with being
Thank
any
you.
More sycophantic.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. It's always a bunch of fun. I always enjoy this one.
So this leads us on to the final, the big one, the yep. Rugby World Cup final 2007 next week, England against South Africa. Who will win this? Who do you think, Will?
Oh, I reckon... Oh, Argentina has to be. Oh, New Zealand, maybe.
And who do you think, Josh?
I mean, when you just go in by the pool stages, it's going to be a comfortable South Africa. You know, it's going to be another... Whatever it was, fucking 36-0 or whatever. Just going to do that again. Say, fuck it, why not?
I'm guessing Dane Cook. But we'll find out next week who... wins the Rugby World Cup. There's no other way to find out this information. You can't refresh a phone in 2007 over and over again. It'll cost you 4p every time you try.
Exactly.
So don't bother Googling this now. No, it'll cost you 4p every time.
No, you can't even Google WAP without getting in a lot of trouble. No. So.
And Mark Kuwaito's England win the Rugby World Cup is the question.
And the key thing is, right, inflation and all that, that 4p is now like 30 quid.
Yeah, so, it's £500, yeah.
Yeah, the only way to find out is to listen next week. So,
or invoice us £500.
Or, yeah, that'll work as well. That'll work as well. Just like drop
we'll
a DM
the
or
score.
Something. On the internet that you've paid 20 quid to use.
If you sign up for the Squid Rugby Patreon for a £500 donation, we'll tell you the score.
You get to find out at long last.
We just sent you the score of the World Cup final.
Sent you the match report.
An email that just says... England. All right.
Don't throw that money away.
I'll just send them a score from 2019 instead. Thank you, Will, as ever. Thank you, Josh. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week for the final. Thank you very much. Good night.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.